The views and opinions of shows on KCNR are those of the hosts, guests, and callers only, and do not necessarily reflect those of the staff, management, or advertisers of KCNR Radio.
Welcome back to We the People Radio. Just in case you didn't know, that was Jackson Brown, Redneck Friend. We were just talking about that like a long time ago when we first started this this program kind of on a lark. It's like, oh, that's a funny song.
Yeah, people know what that is. It's kind of funny. And it's been like 6 years. We're still playing it. Like, you got to be careful what you pick.
Yeah,
stuff like
it
that.
It could stick.
It could be there forever.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's a good thing we kind of like it. Okay, so you can find all our information at wethepeopleradio.us for those of you who didn't hear the first hour. And if you didn't hear the first hour, definitely go to the website and listen to it. You can also pick up the previous two shows we did with Elaine on January 24th of 2016 and February 7th of this year. She has written two books, Going to Pieces. It's The Dismantling of the United States of America. And Slumbering Thunder is her latest book, a primer for confronting the spread of federal Indian policy and tribalism overwhelming America. And it is overwhelming America. So if you don't live in an area that is inundated with issues involving federal Indian policy, you're paying for it. So it's either hitting you and you're paying for it, or you're just paying for it. And at the end of the day, when it affects your water, the water rights as much as it does out here in the West, you know, that has implications for anybody who values private property. Because without your water rights, you don't have private property. There's no point. Yeah. So, Elaine, what? Where do you want to go the second hour?
Well, you just mentioned water rights, and I thought it might be good to remind the listener that when these Indian reservations were opened up under the Dawes Act and individual Indians were given their own land, they were allotted out in each, rather than communal living. The goal of Congress in those years was to help American Indians become full citizens like every other American citizen and let them be property owners and vote. And so they were given allotments. And those allotments, with those allotments under the Dawes Act, they were given a water right attached to their allotment that runs with their land in perpetuity. Congress gave them that. And likewise, when the homesteaders came onto the reservations and homesteaded land and got their patents also included a water right in perpetuity attached to their homestead lands. What has happened here on the Flathead is that those water rights have literally been stolen by the tribe and the state and the federal government. They've been removed from those landowners and capitalized to acquire the dam and to implement this whole thing. So those water rights are null and void until we get this compact reversed. And I don't know to what degree you have allotted land and homestead land in your irrigation district areas there, but those same water rights there would be just as vulnerable as the ones that we have technically lost for now here. That's part of the battle. Is taking down property rights, water rights, constitutional protections of their state, if all of the above going on here. Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, and as far as private property beyond the reservation, how, you know, got any ideas on how this will spread, I guess?
Well, it's spreading on and it's spreading off reservation in two ways. One is the tribe has been given authority over all the water coming off all the little tributaries and into the Flathead Lake and Flathead River. And, it controls all the water in 11 counties. And by that means that the public access and use of water is contingent on tribal government oversight and approval in 11 counties. There's three counties that are within the reservation, and there's eight that are not. But those eight that are not are affected to the extent that the public is affected by the water rights that the tribe has on the water. So the second piece is this aboriginal land, their hunting and fishing land, for decades, the term Aboriginal had no legal force in effect, and it still should not. But under the Obama administration, and understand you cannot have Aboriginal land and state land. It's either or. Mm. So if it's Aboriginal land, that means the state has lost its authority. More recently, this term Aboriginal land has been given jurisdictional legs, where it's not just the right for tribal members to hunt and fish, it's the right for the tribal government to control what's going on their Aboriginal lands. Now think about it. The whole North American continent is Aboriginal land. And Obama is pushing out this Aboriginal thing to expand tribalism beyond the boundaries of its reservations. That's where those living around and near reservation are also at risk. That's part of this spreading.
Sure. Well, and, you know, like what we see up on the Klamath is that the Indians regularly talk about putting a call on the water.
Yeah.
You know, meaning that it affects all the farmers and ranchers who would be irrigating, farmers mostly up there.
Yeah, it does.
And that takes effect immediately. I mean, that just shuts the water off.
But it's never gone through court. That's the thing. They've never been able to actually fight this the way due process was, you know, supposed to go.
And the feds are very smart, and so are the tribes. The tribes know that they need to stay out of courts because this is all illegal. So do the feds. And so the big trend is settlement agreements. We're going to put this all together with settlement agreements, and then we don't have to go to court. And that's the tool that is just killing the Western states. You know, go ahead.
Well, and bottom line is if you don't sign the agreement, we're shutting off your water. You know, even the Bureau of Reclamation, we did a whole program on that here a few weeks ago with Larry Kogan. But the Bureau of Reclamation either overtly or covertly sort of leaks out, oh, by the way, we're going to shut your water off. So between the tribes and Bureau of Reclamation on big things like the Klamath Project, you've got 1,200 farmers with a gun to their head.
Yeah, and it's a crapshoot.
Right.
Yeah.
And that's thank you, federal government. Using the tribal governments, not that they're not willing pawns, but to a large extent they are pawns. Federal government is reversing history in the Western states. It is doing everything it can to reverse the Dawes Act, to reverse the Homesteaders Act, to reverse the state's authority of that it owns all of its waters. It's reversing a whole lot of history and acts that settled the West, that created the states, that created the West.
And they're just putting it all into federal control.
Right, exactly. There's which leads me to another kind of 40,000-foot level. I've seen kind of four separate groups, and maybe you guys can add to this, four separate groups. Each group has a very different mission, but their missions harmonize. One would be the tribal governments. Your radical leaders of the tribal governments want the white man off their reservation. That's their dream, white man off their reservation. The greenies, the environmental NGOs, they want the people off the land in large areas of the western states. The feds want to reduce and eliminate state authority and state rights. The feds are really assaulting states, and you can see that at almost every level of our federal government now. And then there's those wonderful globalists who want the one world order. And when you look at the Agenda 21 and 2030 maps, there are no states. There's really no United States. So those four groups, tribes, greenies, feds, globalists, although they have separate long-term goals, those goals all match. And they are the strange bedfellows that are assaulting this country. They truly are. And that's what this election is about, too. This presidential election is, we're either going to restore and remain a separate nation with 50 states, or we're going to go the way of the globalists. That's really what this presidential election is about. And the tribes are a big player in this election because they can contribute heavily to both political parties or the candidates that will do their bidding. It's at federal, state, and local election levels. The tribes money up the candidates they want. And so do the greenies, and so do the globalists. So it's up to us American people as individuals, and that gets back to why I so dearly wish these wonderful Montana people would stand up, would push back, would speak up. I mean, I'm called all kinds of names, but by golly, I will not be muzzled. And if we don't stand up and push back and save this country, we're gone.
Yeah.
But depending on how this election turns out, we're in deep trouble because all these separate groups have a long-term goal that there's no longer a United States. That's really what it's about.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and so for all those people who think it doesn't affect them, hopefully that that makes this a concern that you might mm-hmm. have. So if you want to get smart
yeah.
about this, Geddy Lane's book, it's called Slumbering Thunder, just came out, what, March? Is it March of this year,
yeah,
Elaine?
Yeah, it's on all the major book websites, and it's available in stores. If it's not in your store, you can ask your store to order it. Along the lines of what we were just talking about, I'd like to read a little quote I put
Uh-oh.
In.
Hold that thought, though, because we've got to take a really, really quick break,
oh,
and then we'll be
okay.
right back.
Okay.
And finish out the hour with Elaine Willman, author of Slumbering Thunder. You're listening to We the People Radio. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us.
Give a damn's busted. You can crawl back home, say you were wrong. Stand out in the yard and cry all night long. Go ahead and water the lawn. I give a damn busted. Outlaw, half Cherokee and Choctaw. My baby, she's a Chippewa. Oh, she's a one of a kind. All my friends call me Bear Claw. Village chicken is my pawpaw. He gets his orders from my mama. She makes him walk the line. You can find me in my wigwam. I'll be beating on my tom-tom. Pull out the pipe and smoke you some. And pass it around. 'Cause I'm an Indian outlaw. Half Cherokee and Choctaw. My baby, she's a Chippewa. She's a one of a kind.
You're joining We the People Radio. And, of course, we're chatting about issues that affect everybody, although you might not have known that before. So today we're talking about federal Indian policy with Elaine Willman. All right, Elaine. Sorry, I had to cut you off there.
Well, I thought I'd like to share a little quote that kind of addresses what we're talking about each of us as individual citizens in this country. We either, you know, if we snooze, we lose. If we do not speak up, we're going down. And I thought that this particular quote really fits. It starts with, the danger to America is not Barack Obama, but a citizenry capable of entrusting a man like him with the presidency. It will be far easier to limit and undo the follies of an Obama presidency than to restore the necessary common sense and good judgment to a depraved electorate willing to have such a man for their president. The problem is much deeper and far more serious than Mr. Obama, who is a mere symptom of what ails America. Blaming the Prince of Fools should not blind anyone to the vast confederacy of fools that made him their prince. The Republic can survive a Barack Obama, who is, after all, merely a fool. It is less likely to survive a multitude of fools such as those who made him their president. That's from the Czech Republic President Václav Klaus. I thought that summed it up pretty good. It's the American citizens who put him in office.
Yeah. And for all those people who think that like Donald Trump is an extreme option, well, if you voted for Barack Obama, you gave us Donald Trump. I mean, that really is mm-hmm. where that all comes from.
Yeah, yeah. We're just not, we as citizens are just either too busy or too apathetic or too something.
I think it's a combination.
Well, and there's
really
so much of it. You know, Elaine, like with this, you probably have so many people who live in that area who will be affected by the things that are happening who just are flat overwhelmed.
They are. They are overwhelmed, and they're They value friendship. They value friendship. Let me give you an example. I have some wonderful friends who have 20 or 30 acres, and they know they're going to lose their property is going to devalue. They're likely to lose their irrigation. They're likely to lose their property. But they do not want to risk losing the friendship of a person that they have known for years that supports the compact. And so rather than speak up on their own behalf to save their property, they would rather retain the long-term friendship. I mean, that's absolutely mind-boggling to me because I would think a friend would want them to save their property. But, I mean, that's the kind of thinking that some of the folks here, I mean, it's commendable to value friendship to that level, but to lose your own land and everything you've worked for years because you don't want to upset a friend.
Yeah.
Doesn't agree with you. It's just crazy.
Or that the that the meetings are really contentious. I see that a lot too. You know,
they just don't want to go anymore because there's too much conflict.
Exactly. We've seen that so much. The meetings get confrontational, and then people, I'm not going to go. All they do is fight. I can't handle that. And the next thing you know, they win. You know, you can't let them do that. You got to stay in the fight.
Yeah, and I
know.
Well, and
more and more of it.
They think that the government guys are going to, you know, all these agreements and stuff. Well, if we get an agreement together, then that's going to be good for everybody. But a lot of times, I mean,
that's the power of decades of consensus building and communalism that is tearing us apart.
Well, and they're told by sometimes their long-standing attorneys. And different people who maybe are getting huge payoffs for land idling or selling their water. You know, maybe they're pumping water, so they're getting
that's a big thing now.
Yeah, they're getting a ton of government
money. Idle
your land
and get a paycheck. It's more profitable not to farm than it is to farm. So, you know, let's just keep everything the way it is because I don't need the water.
So they want to sign on to the agreements that actually never solve the problem because it keeps the money going, even though it basically screws all their neighbors, and I've never understood that part.
And that's a tool for taking down crop production. That's another way to get it done.
Yep.
Like the San Joaquin Valley is a million acres of non-production now, and it used to be 20% of our food in the country. It's taking down crop production.
Yep, and I truly believe that's going to come back, and that's going to come back and bite us. I mean, we haven't seen it yet, but when you have so much of our food now coming from out of the country. That's a slippery slope. I mean, all we have to do is have a hiccup in the food chain there, and you're going to see empty grocery store shelves, or you're going to see, you know, $4 lettuce, and people are going to come uncorked because they don't understand what happened. You know, they turned the other way. They kind of turned a blind eye because it didn't affect them, and now all of a sudden their groceries are unaffordable.
Do you have a lot of environmentalists tangled up with your tribe up there?
There are in the state that support this compact, that support the tribe. And, you know, the danger of this compact is that there's six other tribal governments in Montana, and as quick as this tribe gets their compact ratified, the other six tribes will tell the governor, hey, you have to treat us the same. We want ours. And very shortly, the federal government will own all of Montana's state waters in trust for the tribes. That's the danger of this, because the state government will have to treat all tribes the same. So whatever this tribe accomplishes, the others will get theirs. And then there's no water that's any longer owned by the state of Montana.
Wow.
It's just incredible. It really, really is. You know, there's another piece I'd like to talk about.
Sure.
We're at preliminary stages, but that's this Middle Eastern connection. So I don't know if there's time now or
sure.
If
we have a whole half hour.
Oh, good. Well, as you know, Mr. Kogan has done some extensive research, as have I, and I would encourage your listeners, just for kicks and giggles, go to aljazeera.com, and you'll see an abundance of news articles about how excited these Middle Eastern countries are to be working with Native American tribes in the United States. There's an awful lot of information on the website. You can Google things like Native American and mosques, Native American and Muslims, and things come up. The whole North American continent, the Canadian reserves in Canada, the Indian reservations in the United States, are being infiltrated by Middle Eastern countries. And this is with the inadvertent, perhaps, or not, blessings of Congress. The Middle East, the tribal governments can now long-term lease their private Indian trust lands for up to 75 years to Middle Eastern countries without any federal approval and without any federal oversight. They can just bring the Middle Eastern money into their Indian trust lands. And that is extremely troublesome to me because it partners in with the Indian Energy Act, because all your dams and energy, major energy facilities are also on and near Indian reservations. So when you put Indian energy facilities, public facilities taken over by tribes like our Kerr Dam, and use, and Congress says, oh, and you can bring the Middle Easterners in there too, with no approval or oversight, we're in trouble. We've had 326 locations where Middle Eastern enclaves can settle in on land where nobody's looking. And so that really troubles me. And we're just in the first year of research on this, but it has actually been underway, at least on this reservation, since 2009. Very, very low profile, very quiet, but not secret. There's all kinds of information on the Salish Kootenai's website and other Indian websites. So this isn't secret information, but it needs to be surfaced because it is a concern. 326 Indian reservations subject to this opportunity, and 190 sanctuary cities across the country to bring in the refugees, and you have polka-dotted the United States with little Sharia enclaves, and that's Obama's goal. That's what he's busy doing as fast as he can. And to that extent, I think, my personal opinion, is that it's almost genocide for tribal members. You know, the federal government has mistreated Indians for a long, long time, and they've been making up for it with annual subsidies, but nonetheless, the federal government has allowed a monopoly on gaming, the quality of life, the addiction propensity, the addiction to alcohol, predominance of meth and heroin and drug addiction on Indian reservations. And then the Department of Justice told the tribes, oh, yeah, and by the way, you can grow and sell marijuana on your reservation if you want to. And now they're saying, oh, yeah, here's some extra money for you. We'll let you bring the Middle Eastern money in, too. This is a very vulnerable people, a very good, colorful, wonderful, vulnerable people. But their tribal leaders are such gluttons for money from anywhere that I really think that bringing the Middle Eastern Muslims onto Indian reservations is the beginning of the end of that culture. It troubles me deeply for tribal members and for everybody else that lives around here.
I was going to say that it'll trouble everybody.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it's the rookies bringing the pros in. To run everything.
That's totally true.
Yeah, they've been at the tribalism for thousands of years. They'll show them how it works.
And God knows they know how to take stuff over. We need to take a really quick break. On that scary note, we'll let you go get your blood pressure medication. And, sorry, we haven't goofed off as much as we normally do while we're freaking you out. You're listening to We the People. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us.
Earth is just a dead thing you can claim. But I know where the rock and tree and creature has a life, has a spirit, has a name. Think the only people who are people are the people who look and think like you. But if you walk of a stranger. You learn things you never knew, you never knew. Have you ever heard the wolf cry to the blue corn moon? Or ask the grinning buckhead why he grinned? Can you sing with all the voices of the mountain? Can you paint with all the colors of the wind?
On the bank of the river stood Running Bear, young Indian brave. On the other side of the river stood his lovely Indian maid. Little White Dove was her name, such a lovely sight to see. But their tribe fought with each other, so their love could never be. Running Bear, love little White Dove, with a love.
Running Bear is my camp name.
Yeah, that's a different kind of bear.
Oh, sorry. Was my camp name. That could have been my theme song. Oh, that's fun. I like the dun 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 in the background. All right, we're chatting with Elaine Willman here, and she's got a ton of info for us. All right, fire away, Elaine.
I was going to say, if I come on again, you have to play Kalijah. When I was a little girl in the Spokane Valley, we listened to KRM Country Western Station in Spokane, and I would hear Kalijah, and I would just start sobbing about poor old Kalijah.
What's it? How do you spell it?
I think it's K-A-W-L-I-G-A. Kalijah, the poor old Indian. Oh, man. Poor old Kalijah, he never got a kiss. Your listeners know that one. He was an Indian totem pole.
The wood Indian.
Kalijah was a wooden Indian standing outside the store. that's it.
Okay.
I was about 9 years old, and I would just cry about poor old Kalijah.
The wood Indian.
That's what I mean about my lifetime affection for all things Indian. that song just touched me as a little girl. Anyway, back to this.
The unpleasantness.
Yeah, back to this. I must be one of your more depressing guests.
No, we have a lot of depressing guests. We've got tons of them.
Yeah, don't let that bother you.
You're in really good company.
Oh, very good. Well, I'm a real believer in getting information out there and to encourage others and just speak up and let them call you any name they want. By God, we have to preserve our free speech and get past this muzzling, this national muzzling that goes on. You know, if you think independently, well, you're just a hater. Well, that's goofy. And we're the ones that are letting that happen, and we need to stop. I think that's another reason Trump is so fascinating to people, is that he's frank, and he doesn't care what you call him. He's going to give you his thoughts. And more of us Americans need to give the government our thoughts, you know? So, anyway, on the subject of this Middle Eastern, there's one other little piece. It's in the epilogue of Sun, Rain, Thunder.
Okay.
That we were talking about how I think this really, this commingling of American Native Americans with Middle Eastern tribalism is a death knell for American Indians. I really think it is. And I just think it's abominable that Congress would allow this. But anyway, here I just have a couple of paragraphs I'd like to read. I try to imagine nonviolent domestic tribal leaders accustomed to hearing yes to all requests or demands and very comfortable in complete reliance upon others to provide annual certainty for basic needs. These domestic tribal leaders, seated across the table from Muslim Brotherhood folks, is a perilous position. Failure to cooperate with Muslim extremists results in guaranteed violence to any reluctance or opposition. These can be located where no state or governments. Wait a minute, I just lost one. I just lost my place. No matter how much Middle Eastern money arrives to assist the poor American Indians, the stark reality is this: Sharia enclaves will locate on private lands of tribal governments where no state or local law enforcement has oversight. Vulnerable populations in private isolated locations is an obvious next move for penetrating the United States with additional pockets of Eastern civilization for destroying Western civilization. I really think that's what this is about. And I just think it's darn near treasonous, and it certainly puts Native Americans in the front row of harm from the Middle East. I really do.
And
so
in your research, you know, on this federal Indian policy, is there anything that can be done about that part?
Well, yes, I think that can be stopped by executive order. I think depending on who we get in the White House, that can be stopped by executive order, and or Congress can remove that little section of the Hearth Act of 2012 that allows this. Yes, it can be stopped, but it's not going to be stopped until people raise enough noise. And the problem for tribal members is they can't disagree with their tribal government. They get reprisals. I've been working with a woman, a wonderful, wonderful tribal woman here. She disagreed. She dared to stand up at a microphone and disagree with the idea of the tribe getting the dam. And she got a knock on her door from Child Protective Services and was told, "You're not a good parent."
Oh, my gosh, you're kidding.
Three of her kids, three of her girls removed, 19 months. She doesn't even know where they are. She didn't know where they are, and she had to wait for a tribal court hearing. And they kept rescheduling her hearing for 19 months. This is an enrolled tribal member who has to go to her tribal court. And the consequence she got for disagreeing with the tribal government was profoundly severe. It is just recently, she just this last week, got a tribal court hearing. She had an attorney that was very helpful. They had no evidence to accuse her of being a bad parent. And she will be getting her girls back next week. But 19 months of not even knowing where they are because you dared to disagree with your tribal government. And other members here have lost their jobs. They've lost logging leases, land leases. You know, you just dare not. Tribal members cannot disagree with their tribal government. And they have no civil rights, even though there is an Indian Civil Rights Act. It has no enforcement. Tribes don't enforce. Don't provide them with their civil rights. So it's us non-tribal people that have to raise the hell about this commingling of American Indian culture with Middle Eastern country. We have to speak up on their behalf because they're not even able to without great risk.
Wow.
It's really troublesome.
I didn't know that was going on.
And they can't appeal to, like they couldn't get an attorney and appeal to real court. If they're a tribal member, they're stuck with tribal court.
If she had lost in tribal court, I believe she could appeal it into a federal court. But she had to start in tribal court. And they delayed her 19 months.
Wow.
By just not scheduling her court hearing. 19 months she's without her girls. Didn't even know where they were. No communication. And fortunately, a tribal court judge, just this last week, said this is ridiculous. There's no evidence against her being a bad parent. You arrange visitation and the return of her girls. And so she is getting them back. But look how long it took. And thank God for one, wise tribal judge. You know, it's just scary. You know, the Indian Child Welfare Act gives the tribal government full parental control of all enrollable Indians under 18. They have parental, the tribal members do not have parental control over their own children.
Yikes.
That's a great tool for abuse, you know?
Yeah, no kidding.
Well,
if you don't live on the reservation, if, let's say you're, because I know there are people who live all over the place who are enrolled in a tribe maybe in a different state, they're not quite so under the thumb, right? Or are they?
Well, they are. You know, they are to this extent. Congress granted the Indian Child Welfare Act a parental authority to tribal governments because tribal lobbyists went in wringing their hands to Congress, "Our people, my people, we need to preserve our culture. We need to have governance over our culture." And so Congress said, "Okay, here's the Indian Child Welfare Act. Tribal governments have control over all enrollable children under 18 years." If a Now, remember that at least 3 out of 4 American Indians do not live on the reservations, and they've moved off. But if the tribal government population depletes or reduces because they need enrolled members for their subsidies, they can go claim an enrollable child and bring them to the reservation. They can go out of state, they can go across country and do that if they need to.
They can physically remove a child and put them on the reservation?
Right.
Holy mackerel.
Right. They control all adoption proceedings. There have been made, well, you saw that we had a big case not too long ago, the baby Veronica case, where the mother was Hispanic, the father was an enrolled tribal member but had nothing to do with the pregnancy or the baby, and the mother put the child up for adoption to a wonderful couple in North Carolina, I think it was. And when the father came home, he was going to an Iraq where he had nothing to do with the pregnancy, didn't want the child, but for whatever reasons, when he came back home, he decided he did want the child, and they reversed that adoption. The child had only known her parents. They reversed that adoption, pulled that child away. They overturned the state Supreme Court, who ruled for the adoptive parents, and it went up to the U.S. Supreme Court. That child's life was just torn apart under the Indian Child Welfare Act, and there's hundreds and hundreds, if not thousands, of cases similar to that, because tribal governments have parental authority over enrollable children.
Wow.
It's just disgusting. It's just disgusting.
That is...
There's another reason a tribal member isn't going to speak up.
Sure, sure. That's a good way to keep people quiet. We need to take one last quick break, and then we're going to come back and finish out the hour with Elaine Willman, author of
Slumbering Thunder. You are listening to We the People. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us.
Standing by the door, he fell in love with the Indian maid over in the antique store. Girl, I chose you. Girl, he stood there and said he never let it show. Thought she could never answer yes or no, 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 no. Poor Rokalaja, well, he never got a kiss. Poor Rokalaja, he don't know what he missed. Is it any wonder that his face is red? Rokalaja, that poor old wooden bed. He always wore his Sunday feathers and held a tommy hawk. The maiden work of beads and braids and hope someday he talk. Girl, I chose. Well, he stood there as a lonely ass can be, cause his heart falls of an old pine knotted tree, tree to tree.
Ever since the days of old, men would search for wealth untold. They dig for silver and for gold, and leave the empty holes. And way down south in the Everglades, where the black water rolls and the sawgrass waves, the eagles fly and the otters play in the land of the Seminoles. So blow, blow, Seminole wind, blow like you're never gonna blow again. I'm calling to you like a long lost friend, but I know who you are. And blow, blow from the Okeechobee all the way up to Micanopy. Blow across the home of the Seminoles, the alligators and the gods.
All right, Elaine, what have we missed?
We've got 10 minutes.
Hey, thank you. You found Jared find Kalijah? I just heard it.
I know. How fun is that? That's a good idea, that's though, to write a song about a cigar store Indian. Yeah, they must have.
Yep.
Must have walked by one a whole lot.
Well, there's a little girl, Kalijah and Bambi and Old Yeller, were three things that just tore my little childhood heart apart.
Oh, God, Old Yeller. Don't even bring that up. That was a, yeah, that's a bad one.
Yeah. So thank you for that. I think I wanted to mention that Slumber and Thunder is also an ebook, and also Going to Pieces has been selling so big that the publisher did a second reprint on it and added an index. And I didn't realize how much content was in that book, because the original Going to Pieces doesn't have an index. But when they added an index to Going to Pieces, oh, my God, the index is really comprehensive. So actually both books are good reference manuals now because of the indexes in them. And they're both available in stores and online now. And they're both ebooks. So there's a number of ways to acquire them and tell your friends, because these are the only two pieces out there that are talking about these government decisions. You know, in the manner, my heart is with the tribal members. I've had wonderful tribal friends on every reservation I've lived on, and I've helped them as best I can behind the scenes. So my heart is with the tribal members and with American Indian culture, and I want it to thrive and survive, and it is not thriving under these government decisions.
No, it's absolutely not thriving.
The culture is not thriving.
No.
The tribal leaders are, but the people are not.
Well, and we see, you know, what we're looking at here, they've got some of these tribal folks that I know they're trying to do the right thing, but they've got them convinced that, you know, taking out four perfectly good dams is going to give them more water, and getting rid of the hatchery that produces 6 million fish a year is going to give them more fish. I mean, it's crazy.
Well, you know, it's fascinating because the tribal members constitute 1% of America's population, and the waters are for all Americans, and the lands and resources are for all Americans.
Right.
And somehow there's been this mantra that only American Indians are stewards of the land, and only American Indians take care of Mother Earth. We all do. The farmers and cattlemen do. We all have. We all have the same fundamental interests. We really do. So it's based on a faulty premise from the gate.
Yeah.
That these rivers and waters are to be prioritized for 1% of our population. That's politics. That's not reality. You know, that's not really the way it should be. And yet, I'm one that promotes preserving the culture, the history. I think it's a noble history. We have been very unkind to the American Indians, much like we were very unkind with the blacks. We've done a lot of things wrong, but we've done a lot of things right. And we've tried to do right in many ways with all the money that goes out every year to these tribes, but it doesn't reach down to the people to improve their quality of life at all.
I don't think the money's actually helped. I mean, I think the money has kind of enslaved most of these folks.
They really are prison camps, these reservations, and they are enslaved, and they have no incentive. Most of them know nothing different. The ones that know something different leave. The ones that don't know any other world, that's all they know, and they are completely dependent on others to take care of them. And that's really diminishing of the noble American Indian warrior. You know, it really is. But that's where they're at, because of the money.
Yeah.
It's a shame. It's a shame. I grew up in Spokane, Washington, on the South Hill of Spokane, and learned about Chief Joseph and, you know, the Northwestern tribes, and they were magnificent. They were magnificent people. They really, truly were. They massacred some settlers, and settlers massacred them, and a whole lot of things were wrong, but they are magnificent people. But they're not living magnificently today. And I wish they were. I truly, deeply wish they were.
Yeah. Well, besides reading the book and paying attention and getting involved in some of the public meetings that are going on in people, you know, in their area, any other good sources for them?
We have the organization that I'm a part of. I do not speak for them by any means because I'm just one of 19 board members. But Citizens Equal Rights Alliance has a pretty helpful website. It's called CitizensEqualRightsAlliance.org. It has a pretty helpful website. And there's some Indian websites that will give you an idea of what's happening. One is Turtle Talk. TurtleTalkWordPress.com. That really is a great news site for what's going on with all the tribes across the country. And there's another website called Indian Country Today that talks about what's going on across the country, both positive and negative. So there are, you can just Google some words and all kinds of information comes up. But as I said, if you live in L.A. or New York or Portland or Seattle, why would you even bother? You know, what do you care? And that's really part of the big problem we have. And if you're a farmer or a cattleman, how much time do you have to sit at a computer and inform yourself?
Yeah.
It's really hard for people to just take the time to inform themselves. I certainly think every American citizen should reread the Constitution. You'll find the term Indian tribes in there twice, but you won't find tribalism as a governing system in that Constitution. It's not there.
That's a really good point.
And somehow it's taking down our state sovereignties, our citizen sovereignty, and it's bloating the federal sovereignty.
I'm posting.
So the Constitution is really, yeah.
I'm posting the Turtle Talk. What was the other one you said, Elaine?
Indian Country Today.
IndianCountryToday.com.
Those two websites are Native American websites that provide comprehensive news articles about what all the tribes are up to. And on those websites, folks can find out what the tribes in their neighborhood are doing these days and what the news is. And sometimes that news where a tribal government announces a new program, you can find out how that program is going to affect you as a non-tribal person on the reservation or off the reservation. The federal Indian policy is kind of a best-kept secret. It's decisions made between tribal leaders and bureaucrats, and they're not widely published unless you read the Federal Register. Oh, and a reminder, Monday, May 16th, Federal Register. Now, the EPA has decided that tribes can control municipal water quality and county and public, non-tribal water quality. That's going to be huge. And it's effective immediately, May 16th. It's effective tomorrow. These municipalities around the country are going to get knocks on their door from those tribes that pursue that program. And hey, we're here to tell you how your water quality is and what we want you to do.
That ought to scare a few people.
Well, it should, and I hope local elected officials within municipalities and Indian reservations snap to that and have a good response, a good, quick, fast response. Their congressmen, their state legislators should be very reactive to that.
Well, I'll tell you what, we have learned a ton of stuff. We've got a lot of it posted on the website for you, the links that Elaine just gave us. The Citizens Equal Rights Alliance is on there, links to her books, and several articles. Will the United States go the way of Zimbabwe? That was a really interesting article, and I should have made myself a note for us to talk about that, Elaine. Maybe next time.
Oh, yeah.
Thanks for coming on with us.
Well, you're very welcome. I always enjoy it. You guys are just a hoot. And I'm so proud of your courage that you do these programs, Aaron. And is it Bob? And
Bill.
Jared. And I don't know who all is out there, but thank you very much.
Bob's not here, only Bill.
Thanks for being on, Elaine.
Thanks, Elaine. All right. The archive's up, posted for you. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us. See you next week. We're talking with Jim Beers on federal land policy in our national parks and Forest Service and BLM and all that stuff. See you.